During this visit, the topics how we'll do this. Sharanagati is going to be one topic. Sharanagati is a series of songs composed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is in our disciplic succession. The last picture from the right, and that picture of the disciplic succession, explaining the process of surrender to Krishna. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna outlines from beginning of Samkhya Yoga, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, all the corollary understandings that help one become fixed in devotion to Krishna. But his final instruction in Bhagavad Gita, the very famous verse, Sarva Dharmam Paribhyaja, Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. Sharanam, we should surrender to Krishna. So what constitutes the process of surrender to Krishna? That's our topic. That's one topic we'll be discussing. Surrendering to Krishna. The process of surrender to Krishna. And another topic, I'm not sure how this one is going to work. The other topic is going to be exploring Prabhupada's instructions on a very famous phrase that he spoke. Books are the basis. Preaching is the essence. Purity is the force. And utility is the principle. We'll be discussing that to some extent. Maybe we'll discuss that in the evening hours. So maybe I'll just begin by making an introduction to the Sharanagati topic. How to surrender under the personality of Godhead is a topic of concern for all devotees of the Lord. There's many stalwart acharyas who have at length described this process. The primary scriptural reference for this is the Padma Purana. In the Padma Purana, we find a list of six angas, or limbs, of surrender. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Sanatana Goswami, he also describing the science of devotional service, listed the same six principles of surrender. And we find them recorded in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in Madhya Lila, where Lord Chaitanya instructed Sanatana Goswami. It then appeared in Hari Bhakti Vilas of Sanatana Goswami. Have you heard of Hari Bhakti Vilas? Hari Bhakti Vilas? It's a how-to manual. Just like when you purchase some electronic equipment, a tape recorder, a television, or a computer, or even a microphone. You buy the electronic fan, you buy the thing, and it has an operation manual. How do you use it? How-to manual. So, with the process of devotional service, there's also a how-to manual called Hari Bhakti Vilas. How to worship the deity, how to perform Vedic ceremonies, how to perform a wedding ceremony, how to perform a birth ceremony, how to perform initiations, how to perform funerals, how to approach a spiritual master, what is the process of initiation, how to do this, everything, every aspect of life. So in that Hari Bhakti Vilas, Sanatana Goswami also presents these six angas of surrender to Krishna. And Rupa Goswami also presents in his Nectar of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which Prabhupada translated as Nectar of Devotion. You're all familiar with Nectar of Devotion, at least you've heard the title. Nectar of Devotion. Their nephew, Jiva Goswami, he elaborately discusses this in his Sandarbhas and Bhakti Sandarbha. In the commentaries on Vedanta Sutra of Ramanujacharya, Sri Bhashya, it's discussed at length. Madhvacharya's commentary on Vedanta Sutra, it's discussed at length. Jamunacharya and his Stotra Ratna, it's not discussed, but Stotra Ratna is prayers. Stotra Ratna, jewel-like prayers offered by Jamunacharya. He presents the principles of Sharanagati in his Stotra Ratna. We'll look at some of each of those reference sources. Main idea is it's a very big, very important, and a very big topic. Because after all, when Krishna says you should surrender unto me, how do you do that? What's the process? So, of course, many of the understandings are already presented in Bhagavad Gita. This is a very particular approach. So, in their explanation of the process of surrender, our acharyas explain something that's a little common sense, and that is what induces people to surrender to God? And one thing that induces everyone to surrender to God is danger. When there's danger, then you need shelter. The Vedic literature has described that an animal has four propensities that are also found in all forms of life, including human life. And those four propensities are eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Eating, sleeping, mating, or reproducing other members of the species, and defending. And of the four, the most powerful is defending. One might think you have to eat, and many people are driven by their sex desire. And it's very hard to overcome sleep when you're very, very, very tired. You're compelled by the influence of sleep. But the fact is, when we're engaged in any one of the other three activities, if some danger comes, one abandons the other three activities and engages in defending. It's the strongest of the four animal propensities. And for the most part, human society is materialistic. That is, one looks for shelter or protection or safety in material things. Starting with wealth. With wealth, then I can have a nice house. I can have a nice family. We can have household paraphernalia. We have friends. We have so many things. And all those things lull one into a sense of being, everything is very nice. We're protected. We have safety. But circumstances of life happen very abruptly sometimes, and boom, that safety is taken away. Some financial problem in the house is taken away, or some explosion and it's blown up, or some member of the family or the whole family dies untimely. Please don't sit by the door. Please don't sit by the door. At some point, persons who are living by the standard way of life in society, namely materialistic society, come to understand these are false shelters. They can, and at some point they will, all be taken away, and there's no substantial shelter. When that circumstance comes, people turn to God. In fact, He's the eternal shelter, or He's the shelter of all shelters. If something seems to give us a sense of shelter, Even the capacity to seem like that comes from God. And so, seeing the Lord as one's ultimate protector, this is one of the limbs of Sharanagati. But persons who are very proud, it's very difficult for them to turn to God, even in such situations of danger. And therefore, humility is one of the symptoms, or is part of the process of Sharanagati, or surrender to the Supreme Lord. Third item, everyone has to see to some type of maintenance for their physical and mental and spiritual well-being. Minimally, our physical well-being must be something that provides maintenance. So in materialistic society, persons think it's their labor that's the source or means of their maintenance. And one who is situated in the process of surrender understands and cultivates more deeply the understanding of those very things that we receive that are sustenance and maintenance. Ultimately, it's Krishna that's providing those things. As Krishna is providing our ability to perform some type of work, and the instruments, namely the senses, by which we can work, and the intelligence by which we know how to move the instruments according to a certain plan. The opportunity, the field of activity, and orchestrating all those things together, ultimately it's dependent upon Krishna to deliver the result. So Krishna is truly our maintainer. And to further enhance one's, so that's three principles: protection, humility, maintenance. Two others that go together are accepting of those things favorable for achieving that objective of surrendering to Krishna, and rejecting things that are unfavorable in the matter of devotional service to Krishna. Just like we find in the definition of bhakti given in Nectar of Devotion. These same principles of rejecting certain things and accepting other things defines what bhakti is. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma janavratam anukulena krishna anushilana bhakti uttama. So the first part of the verse says what are some things that are to be rejected because they impede, they interfere with devotional service. Well, fruitive work, the mentality of the fruitive worker, and the mentality of speculating to understand those things that are beyond our capacity to understand. Jnana and karma. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma janavratam. Rejecting fruitive work and speculative knowledge, but accepting anukul. These are the two Sanskrit words, pratikul and anukul. rejecting things unfavorable, and anukulyasya sankalpa, anukulyena krishnanu shivana, bhakti uttama. Accepting and literally, how Prabhupada has taken this word, cultivating activities that are favorable to Krishna as we understand them from previous perfected souls or great acharyas. These are symptoms of surrender. And the final item is total self-dedication to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Atmanivedana. Atmanivedana. So there are six limbs of surrender. And hopefully in the course of the discussion on this topic, each of us will become more aware, maybe a little focused on what it takes to surrender to Krishna. And one other comment is that this same process of surrender, it applies in the very beginning stages of devotion. The same process applies in the intermediate stage of devotion. It applies in the higher stages of devotion. It applies even in the spiritual world. The business of surrendering to Krishna is going on in the spiritual world. And how we apply that those principles of surrender naturally needs to be appropriate for our beginning stages. But through these songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we'll come to understand that because he does this in his songs, he applies them to very, very high forms of devotional service. The topics that we'll cover, there'll be some explanation. We'll sing some of the bhajans together from the Sharanagati songs. And we'll hear how some of the great acharyas have made expressions in their writings or their songs or their prayers to the Lord, exhibiting these six symptoms of surrender. And hopefully we'll all be moved to further surrender to Krishna successfully. Once Prabhupada explained that during the disciples of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was a PhD from Germany during the 1920s and 1930s and early 1940s. In other words, after World War I, between World War I and World War II, this was when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's preaching was at a very high stage. So during that time there was a lot of interest in the wisdom of India, the scriptural teachings of India. So one German professor came to India and he was just very inquisitive. He visited many temples, he met many sadhus, one of those kind of things. And he's the one that Prabhupada is referring to in Nectar of Devotion, that he concluded that Krishna must be God because he has nothing to do. All the other deities in temples, they were all doing something. Goddess Kali, she was very busy. Durga, very busy. Shiva and Parvati, and so forth. Ganesh, they're all doing something. But in Krishna's case, he was just enjoying. There's nothing he had to do. Surely he must be God. And he met Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur and became his disciple. So he explained to the devotees that after the war, many Germans became atheists. And the reason is, when the war began, the people that were back in the home country, mothers and wives and family members, were praying to God, please send my husband home, or my father, brother, whatever, home from the war. And Prabhupada explained, and the allies, they were praying to God, please send my son, brother, father, relative home from the war safely. And Prabhupada's comment was, God had a dilemma. He had to respond to the call of opposing parties, how to resolve this conflict. Or another example he gives is the thief and the householder. The householder's in his house praying, dear God, please protect me from the burglars and the bad people. And the burglar, the thief, is thinking, God, please allow me to steal. This is my means of maintaining myself. I know nothing else besides robbery and thievery. God has a dilemma. Or we, not necessarily as part of two opposing forces, but we may also find ourselves in some dilemma, some difficulty, some danger, some circumstance, some tribulation, some obstacle, something, and we pray to God, please help me resolve this circumstance. But not always do we feel that our prayer is being heard. When they discuss Sharanagati, their statement is that where our attention should go is to assess how well we are following the way of surrendering to the Supreme Lord. Because those who are surrendered to the Supreme Lord, he does in fact protect them. He does in fact maintain them. He does in fact reciprocate with their appeal for his shelter. Most certainly that's the case. But those, on the other hand, those that are not following the ways of surrender, and in fact may even be doing something very bad in the name of God. Just as world events are portraying how, it's not to say even that either party in these dramatic world events are pure. far from it. But when direct evil things are being done in the name of God, that's something other than surrender. It's something, what I'm saying is something like Kamsa. Prabhupada describes this in several places in Nectar Devotion. Kamsa was Krishna conscious, in one sense. He was always conscious of Krishna. He was always thinking, Krishna, I want to kill him. Krishna, it's said that he will kill me. Krishna, I sent so many demons in me. Krishna destroyed all those demons. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Krishna was on his mind 24 hours a day, when he was eating, when he was lying down, when he was walking, when he was bathing, when he was doing anything, the thought of Krishna was on his mind. But it wasn't favorable. It was inimical. So he was Krishna conscious, but he wasn't a devotee. And surrender means to not be Kamsa, but to be Krishna's devotee. Surrender to Krishna in a favorable way. Anupuryena Krishna Anushilana. This is just an introduction to the topic. Yeah, I'll just mention one important thing. I covered this topic in Singapore when visiting there. And one of the things that came from that discussion was there's a very strong tendency, not just for people who are, certainly for people who are involved in academics, but not just people who are involved in higher studies. It's true for most of us that when we hear something like this, we hear it practically so many things. It's information. And we're accustomed to just processing information. As there's a whole technology, information technology. Or as people learn in school, you have the subject you study, and what you're rewarded for is being able to present back that information. So, and sometimes to mix this information with some other information and come up with something a little creative. But generally it's just to represent back again the information. And if you can do that nicely, you get a pat on the head, you get a certificate, and with that, you get a job. And there's your maintenance. And that's what's important for many, many people. That's the process of education. But actually, this knowledge and the whole of Vedic wisdom is meant to transform our lives. I was just in Bombay, and they have a system in Bombay that the Chalpati temple, they don't have one temple president. They have, I think it's five temple presidents, and they take turns, so nobody burns out. So they have some service, but sometimes they diminish that service and take administrative responsibility, and then they retire from that administrative responsibility and absorb themselves in their service, but they're still there as a resource to help. It's a nice system. So one of those rotating temple presidents, his name is Radha Gopinath Prabhu. The deities are Radha Gopinath, and he's Radha Gopinath Prabhu. And he's actually a better educator than he is an administrator. Well, he's a good administrator, but he's a very good educator. So a few years back, he described something that came out of the national, whatever it's called, central governments, some assembly or conference on education, and the keynote speaker explained that education in India today can be summarized in five words. You heard this one before? Information, no transformation. Whereas there's a note in the readings in Vedic literature, that compilation by Satsarup Maharaj, he makes a reference to one British scholar that says that the Vedic knowledge is not just knowledge for knowledge's sake, but it's knowledge for transformation. It's knowledge to change our lives. Janata agha viplava tadvagha sarvo janata agha viplava yasmin pati slokim abhadya vatslapi Namani Nantasha Yashon Katani Adshrin Vanti Gayanti Granthi Sadhavaha. We're meant to transform our lives or experience a spiritual revolution in our lives. So please, when you hear the subject, don't let it just be an information processing exercise, but consider before you begin how this can be implemented. Yeah, I think I know how I'll conclude. I gave this on Saturday evening. We took part in a very large function. And the group had just completed a 6-day Bhagavad Gita summary study. And so, since the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita was this 1866 sloka, Sarva Dharmam Parityajamamikam Sharanam Vraja, they wanted me to speak about how to surrender, especially because they were saying we're all householders, we're involved in worldly affairs, so reading Bhagavad Gita is very nice, but how to apply it practically in our busy material lives? We need to surrender to Krishna. How can we do that? So I discussed this point of the process of surrender. That was their request. So one person, the first person that asked the question, said, how do we avoid the tendency to have this understanding that you've just presented go in one ear and out the other ear? And the my sense of what that phrase means, it means it's hollow upstairs. There's the skull, and then there's nothing inside, so it's just like the wind blows. Goes right through it. So that's what I spoke about at the Sunday feast lecture at the Chaupati Temple. How do you take instructions and apply them? Actually, Krishna Smarana was asked to give a seminar when he was visiting in Chicago. In Gidanagari, how to apply instructions. How to apply instructions. So, I gave the theory, and we had a little break, and he took over and gave the practical, how to apply instructions. Like, here's an instruction, how do you apply it? And then he would explain, yeah, here's how you apply it. So, the application of instructions, just like this, the topic of surrendering to Krishna. It'd be nice to surrender to Krishna. Maybe I'll do that someday. What's for lunch? In other words, not taking it so seriously, not really trying to apply. So, if there's... I'm going to outline some points that will help for applying instructions, specifically these and generally other instructions. One I've already indicated, and that is, like the idea of surrender, there's some immediate reason to surrender. Like standing at the door is a tiger or somebody with a gun. Or there's a family member that has just been in a fatal accident, and there's all these feelings. So some immediate situation that demands, you can't just put it off anymore. You have to surrender. You have to take shelter. So immediate circumstance can compel that. Or one can just be a little thoughtful and understand without a calamity that this isn't working. The material paradigm of working hard for sense gratification, it's just not satisfying. I want to do something different besides acting stupid for with no good result. So I want an alternative. So an essential component for implying instructions is a desire for something that's going to reform or reshape my life. I'm going to give you four things. That's one of them. A desire for something other than the material opportunities that are available, material options. Jigyasa, Brahma jigyasa is the idea in Sanskrit. Inquisitiveness into the nature of the Absolute. Apart, meaning apart from things that are temporary and relative. Then another is receiving that knowledge from an absolute source. That takes some special fortune, because most sources of knowledge are not only far from absolute, generally they're misleading. They're plain wrong. I don't know if you've had the experience of asking somebody for directions, and they say, go that away, when you know it's that away. So right away, it's the wrong direction. So being able to distinguish misleading sources of knowledge and being very fortunate to receive from a proper source absolute transcendental knowledge. Another criterion for applying. I understand that this is an absolute source and I'm very fortunate. Now I can inquire. Then another is accepting. Sometimes we get what we know is very good advice or very good instruction, but we don't accept it. We just put it on the shelf. Prabhupada criticized is the right word too. He criticized devotees that accumulate books but don't know even one of them. The better you don't have a library full of books, but you, if you just have one book, one genuine Vaishnava instruction, and you know it thoroughly, it does so much more than a whole book full of, or a whole shelf full of books that you don't even know what it says. Acceptance. So that's desire to know, hearing from the right source, accepting that this is an absolute indication from Krishna how the desire to know and to conduct my life correctly is being supplied. And then finally comes application. Undergoing whatever it takes to apply that which you've accepted to completion. Not just for a little while, but till completion of the task. Now these principles are principles that Prabhupada presents in describing the transcendental realizations of Lord Brahma from the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Brahma is the original preceptor or the Acharya, the founder of our Sampradaya. We are within the Brahma Sampradaya. There are four standard Sampradayas, Vaishnava Sampradayas, that are legitimate, that are intact, that connect one to Krishna, an unbroken line of Pacific succession. Brahma Sampradaya is one, and we're within the Brahma Sampradaya. So Brahma applied these principles, and we must also apply the same principles. In order that this experience of discussing how to surrender to Krishna doesn't become an intellectual exercise only. Some devotees are tired this morning. So let's see if we can start this process of application even before beginning. That is, when Brahma began searching for answers to some very important and basic questions, like, who am I? Where have I come from? What is my source of origin? And this desire to create that I have, how am I to carry it out? He had the Lord's empowerment to create a universe, but he hadn't a clue how to do that. Never seen a universe before. There was nothing. There's nothing to compare it to. But he had this strong impetus to create. So, even before he began searching, he was very, very dedicated in principle to serve the Lord and to carry out the instruction the Lord gave him. Even before he started to search, what to speak of before he started to create, those were in place, those principles were in place. Say it again. He was ready to carry out whatever he heard. Say it the other way. It's useless to go to someone and ask for some understanding of a circumstance and you just accept what you like and don't accept what you don't like, and you're wasting your time and their time. You just want to do what you want to do, then there's no need to go and ask somebody, what should I do? Just do what you want to do. But especially when it comes to spiritual topics, then one has to receive those understandings from Krishna, as Brahma received, or those who are repeating the message of Krishna as Brahma heard it, in disciplic succession. Then it's not a matter of dogma, but it's not a matter of, as long as it matches up with what my own ideology is, I like it. That's foolish. But that's what a lot of people do, but what a lot of us do. Accepting selectively. In any case, this process of surrender is something that's, as I've already mentioned, it's standard subject for elaboration by our Vaishnava Acharyas. So it behooves us to understand it. We should hopefully want to understand it thoroughly, so that we can apply it. And these steps are very helpful. Being very desirous to know, being fortunate enough to receive the knowledge from a proper and authorized channel, and then accept it. Accept it means it goes into your heart. It doesn't go in one ear and out the other. It goes into your heart. That means you live with that instruction. It becomes part of your life. It's so meaningful and compelling that you feel impelled to act accordingly. Krishna is giving an understanding how I can come to him. Here it is. I accept it. Now let me undergo whatever it takes to apply it. Prabhupada sometimes described the renderings within scripture as like a map. So on the map it shows there's Bombay and over here there's Hyderabad and over here there's Vishakhapatnam. So I was in Bombay and I wanted to go to Vishakhapatnam. And the map it shows goes zoom, zoom. So if I have the desire and I hear from the right source and I have a good map, and accept this is it. This is the way to get from, then the travel may have some interesting surprises along the way. The map isn't necessarily going to show that when I'm going from this point A to point B, I'll encounter such and such an obstacle and such a person and such circumstance. It doesn't show that in the map. Those are details. But I can handle this person, that circumstance, that obstacle, no problem, because I have a very strong desire to go from here to there. I have a good source of knowledge how to get from here to there. And I've accepted. This is it. Let's go. It's another discussion to talk about the obstacles that are there in the path. This is how to get on the path and move forward towards the goal, that is achieving the lotus feet of Krishna. If we have a very strong, compelling desire, I want, above all else, in my life, when everything is done, whenever that happens, I want to be situated in a loving relation with Krishna. I'd like that to happen as soon as possible. But I want it very, very, I understand it's not cheaply accomplished, but I want that very much. And I understand this process of surrender is how to make that happen, how to bring that desire to fruition. Therefore, the subject of how to surrender to Krishna, very important subject. So let me pay great attention to it and see how I can apply it very carefully. So there's a little introduction to our Sharanagati topic. It's already 10:15. So any questions or discussion on what we've covered? What is...